took his finger like this and he knocked down the whole stack. And he said, Yamuna Mayi Ki Jai. And I said, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. And Pishima said, Gorani Bai Ki Jai. And I said, oh, Srila Prabhupada, you ate everything. He said, now this was a speech that the two of us had with each other. Srila Prabhupada and I had signals for what the quality of the prasad was. Already now things had evolved much from the very early days. And if he patted his stomach, that meant it was third class. If he went like this, second class. If he went like this, first class. This meant excellent. So he said like that, excellent. And in this way, I remember very light, sweet, jovial, humorous first meeting with Pishima, where she didn't understand a word of what was going on, but she truly loved it. She was very, very fond of Srila Prabhupada. And from that day that I met her until very last that she was with Srila Prabhupada in 1976, I was also present in Vrindavan. She worshipped him. She just worshipped her brother. And he obviously was very, very fond of her. Generally, Prabhupada would reveal what he thought we needed to know. Some people, their nature is to ask endless questions. But I always felt like a fool asking more than what Srila Prabhupada revealed. Now, if we didn't hear properly, then Srila Prabhupada would have to ask questions and he would have to repeat. But I found very often the same things that he taught in 1967, save in regards to cooking, he was revealing that that same subject matter in 1976, so many years later. Prabhupada kept Krishna consciousness very simple. And for those of us who engaged in his service, at least my relationship was simply to hear and to follow those instructions personally. And in the course of moving the deities, I believe each man two per deity, I was following. One of them knocked. The curtains were closed. We were behind adjusting the deities. And one of the persons, somehow or another, inadvertently, knocked one of these columns with their elbow. And in as fast as an accident happens in an automobile going 70 miles an hour, everything slowed down into slow motion. And I remember watching this column go out with the speed of lightning. Srila Prabhupada knocked all of the paraphernalia with his right hand off the bottom granite step, stepped up with his right foot on the first step, his left foot on the second step, grabbed one column, this huge column. The column was at least 6 to 8 inches in diameter, with his right hand, and Radharani's hand with his left hand. And I saw on his brow little beads of perspiration, the first time I had ever seen him perspire. And this was such a chivalrous thing that Srila Prabhupada did that I understood what the rasa of chivalry was. And he had that in protecting Radharani. Well, that's one example of Srila Prabhupada exhibiting a very personal rasa with Krishna, actually saving Radharani from disaster and exhibiting superhuman strength and the alacrity of the movement of the mind. It couldn't have been faster.
যে আনিল প্রেম দন করুণা প্রাচুর্য Madonna, per un abbraccio.
The thing I remember most about Jamuna is the quality of Govinda. You've heard the Govinda song. It's the thing that every time the deities are open all over the world in ISKCON temples. But there was a very conservative element in the Los Angeles temple when that record came out. Govinda Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. We were singing it, and George Harrison really liked the song. So we recorded it, and then we sent the recording to Los Angeles from London. And we heard that Prabhupada was not allowed to hear it because it was the sound of a woman's voice singing. And we thought, this is very strange. This is one of the most famous people in the world recording this, and Prabhupada wasn't allowed to hear it. Then he asked the devotees, when he was sitting on his vyasasana in the temple, if he could hear this record. And they said, well, we don't have a tape player here. We don't have a record player. We can't do it. And so Prabhupada told him, why not just use the main speakers where the class comes out. And they had in Los Angeles some very large speakers at the front of the room. So they really didn't have any choice. They decided to play it for Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, it happened right when the doors of the deities were opening. It was the deity greeting. And so Prabhupada had it played then, and he didn't say a word. He just listened. And people noticed that tears were streaming down his face as he heard it. And he liked it very, very much. And at the end of that time, I was told, he asked that song be played in temples all over the world. And then about a year later, one devotee, whose name I probably don't want to mention, said that his version of Govindam Adi Purusham should be the one that's played all over the world because he was a male. And Prabhupada was in Vrindavan at the time, and he wrote him and said, so this is not an ordinary piece of music. This is concert. That was the word he used. This is concert. And that was the end of that. And it's still played in temples all over the world, that song. And I remember when we got to London, we all went to London, six people plus a small baby. That was Shyamasundara Malati's baby. She did a lot of calligraphy, and Prabhupada recognized her for her calligraphy. And I remember even before one of the first places we used to eat, and as we were eating, she would read, usually from Chaitanya Chaitamrita. As we were eating, she would read. And a very dedicated person, right from the very beginning, because no one else had that presence of mind to read during eating time, but she did. And it was eating prasadam, but she took it as a sacred act, and she read to us, and we all listened very carefully. Instead of talking over the eating, it was hearing spiritual knowledge.
Hare Krishna, dear friends and dear devotees. Well, can you shut that one that's hitting in the eyes? Like, thank you.
Where were you on that
night? So today we are here to honor and celebrate the life of Jamuna Devi Dasi. Many of you may only know her through the Govindam prayers, some of you through the cookbook, but those are almost minor details of the life of Jamuna, and hopefully some of this will be reflected. I'm going to just give a brief outline of her devotional history, and that began in the summer of 1966, while she was still living in Portland, Oregon. It was a very thunderstormy, rainy northwest day. And she was sitting on her front porch at the time, a young woman named Joan Campanella. And the mailman came through the storm up on her porch and handed her an aerogram from her sister, who had gone to New York City with her boyfriend, Michael. And her sister, Jan, wrote that she and Michael had met a Swami. And the Swami was going to marry them. So she asked Joan, would she please come for the wedding? And thereafter, quite soon, Joan set off for New York. So in Jamuna's words, little did I know what kind of wedding it would be. All I knew was that they had met a Swami and received the names Mukunda and Janaki from him. When I saw the Swami, he was sitting beside a window in his front room, bathed in sunlight, surrounded by pots of prasadam, which he was distributing to the devotees who were sitting around him. Mukunda introduced me, and the Swamiji offered me some prasadam. At the time, I was a strict follower of macrobiotics, so this prasadam was very unpalatable to me. Yet this radiant and beautiful person was so eager for me to accept it that I did. I did take it, but in my mind I decided this would be the last time I would ever have lunch with the devotees. Then the Swami put his hand in a big pot with crystallized sugar syrup sticking to the outside. He pulled up a huge, round, dripping gulab jamun. I said, oh, no, I'm so full, I couldn't take any. And he said, take. He made me take it. When I finished that gulab jamun, I was fully convinced this would be the last time I would ever come here. Soon after the wedding, Joan and Janaki and Mukunda began driving a 10-day trip from New York to the West Coast. And on their way, they stopped en route in Oregon, and they picked up two old friends. Now, they were on their way to San Francisco, but they passed through a rather remote part of Oregon and collected two of their old friends who were situated at the time on the top of a mountain, a really big mountain, like 10,500 feet tall mountain, really huge. And that was Sam Spearstra, Shumsitter, and Melanie Nagel, Malati. So this little group went down to San Francisco, and shortly another fellow, Roger Siegel, joined in. And the San Francisco's temple was established. Jamuna was captivated by Swamiji's purity and the beauty of Krishna conscious philosophy that Srila Prabhupada was presenting, and she decided to become his disciple. So eventually Swamiji initiated Joan and Roger, giving them the names Yamuna and Gurudas, and he married them the following day. Well, this was about in March. They didn't, you know, Srila Prabhupada came in January of 67, and then they went away for a little while up north and then came back. So this was at that time. So he gave him instruction. He said the wife, a husband and wife, should keep Krishna in the center of their lives and serve him and assist one another in that way. So the woman remembers that when Srila Prabhupada would take his daily walks, then anyone could go with him. Later on, especially when he came to the bigger centers, it became quite a privilege to accompany Srila Prabhupada on a daily walk. But in San Francisco, all you had to do was show up. And quite often, Jamuna would be there. One day she said, Swamiji, do you think sometimes you could allow us to go to Vrindavan with you? He stopped and turned and he said, yes, I will take you to Vrindavan one day, and I will show you Vrindavan on foot. And Jamuna, she reflected, I thought that was the most hopeful thing I had ever heard in my life, and I was just waiting for that time to come. In May of that year, Jamuna and Gurudas received their first letter from Swamiji sent from New York. He wrote, "I have very good appreciation for both of you, Gurudas and Yamuna. You are two good souls. Now you have combined. Live peacefully, chant Hare Krishna, and be happy in your life." Then, this letter was in May. In June, Srila Prabhupada had his stroke. And at that time, he had asked all of the disciples to chant 24-hour kirtan. And fortunately, he recovered. And he wrote, "Due to your sincere and ardent prayer, Krishna has saved my life." And at that same time, he decided to return to India to fully recuperate. So from Vrindavan, he wrote to Gurudas, and he wrote in that letter, "Regarding Yamuna, your wife, I've got very great regard because she is a very sincere girl. I am sure you should feel fortunate to have such a wife. Please offer my blessing to her and always cooperate with your wife in the service of the Lord. You will be eternally happy." Then came the trip to London. And Jamuna remembers many parts of this. At Prabhupada's request, it was Shamsundara and myself and our small daughter Saraswati, Mukunda, Janaki, Gurudas, and Yamuna. And because when we arrived, we had very little funds, we lived separately in different places as we tried to somehow or other fulfill the mission for Srila Prabhupada and secure a building. So Jamuna was reflecting, "I had to move to a Jamaican ghetto, the top floor of one of the buildings. It was awful. Day after day after day, I would sit and listen to a tape of Swamiji singing. It was a beautiful tape he had just done in Los Angeles, and I would pray to him, 'Please come, please come.'" So Srila Prabhupada wrote to Yamuna, "Your appreciation is so nice. A Srimad Bhagavad Gita and the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Please continue to study and preach in this way to all you meet. I'm very happy to learn that you are going to various homes and lecture halls and holding kirtan and delivering lectures from these transcendental literatures. This is very nice. And if you continue in this way, gradually so many people will be attracted and our London Center will soon be successful." So eventually, we were still trying to have a place. And at that time, there was the recording that was made with George Harrison. So soon after that time, on the invitation of John Lennon, we all moved with Srila Prabhupada to John Lennon's Tittenhurst Park Palace, or estate, actually. So after Srila Prabhupada's morning walk on the estate, he would sit alone and he would sing prayers while he accompanied himself on the harmonium. And quite often Jamuna would sit outside the stairs, quietly sitting outside the stairs of his room, listening and crying in appreciation. But one morning after he'd finished singing, Srila Prabhupada called her and she went to his room and he said, "What are you doing?" "I'm listening, Swamiji. Your singing is beautiful." And he said to her, "Do you want to come in and listen?" "Yes, very much." And then he said, "You can play drum and I will play harmonium. And Purushottam, he will play kartals." Purushottam was a servant at that time. So for several mornings, Yamuna recorded Srila Prabhupada singing a prayer by Narottam Das Thakur, "Hari Hari Bifale." And Srila Prabhupada explained the meeting, "O Lord Hari, I have wasted my life, although I have taken a rare human birth. Like a miser, I have not served Radha and Krishna, and thus I have knowingly drunk poison." Prabhupada asked, "Yamuna Prabhu, what is your favorite prayer?" She answered, "I like the Shastastika prayers." And he said, "That's very nice." And she asked, Swamiji, what is your favorite prayer? And he replied, this prayer, Hari Hari Bifale. And Jamuna remembers that finally we had gotten our building on Berry Place and installed the beautiful deities of Sri Sri Radha Labhaneshwara. And Jamuna remembers that this was a real growth period in London. Just as there was a burgeoning of youth interested in spiritual life and breaking out of the mold of the 50s and 60s in the USA, it was also happening in London at the same time. We attracted people mostly through Harinam Sankirtan, going out in the streets. So, said, we were the seeds being planted, and he was the blossoming creeper of Lord Chaitanya's love. And when he came, everything ignited with the thunder of veracity and speed of a firestorm. So Srila Prabhupada had written to Yamuna at one point. He said, I'm very glad to learn you are training the two boys in Krishna consciousness. You are a very nice girl, and I have got full faith in you, and I wish you can develop this line of service in the society. He was also initiating people based upon Yamuna's recommendations. And in another letter, he acknowledged Yamuna's preaching. I was so glad to learn that you have defeated four of the whips of the Ramakrishna mission by giving quotations from the Bhagavad Gita. And he wrote, very nice, listen to this very carefully. He says, if you carry on your service to Radha and Krishna according to the prescribed rules, your love of Krishna will increase more and more. This you are seeing practically by the grace of Krishna. So Jamuna remembers then following our wonderful London episode, going to India. So in 1970, we again, Guru Das, Jamuna, myself, Shamsundar Saraswati, and other devotees were the first brigade of Westerners who arrived at Srila Prabhupada's request to form the Sankirtan mission in India. Jamuna reflected, the 2 weeks we spent in Bombay were two of the most powerful weeks of my life because at this time Srila Prabhupada allowed us to taste kirtan in Lord Krishna's Bharat Vasa. The center of our activity every day was Nagar Sankirtan. Our kirtan party was like a family, a tight family. We were shoulder to shoulder, just like God brothers and God sisters, with so much affection and respect for each other. We felt that Srila Prabhupada was our father and we were his spiritual children. Kirtan was the life-giving aspect of our existence. So from Bombay, Srila Prabhupada started bringing us here and there throughout India. And one evening on one excursion, which at those times we were not flying around, we were taking trains, the train was returning from one such excursion, and there was a 20-minute stopover in Delhi on the way back to Bombay. And a gentleman, Mr. Gupta, got on the train, and he had been corresponding with Srila Prabhupada, and he wanted to get Srila Prabhupada to stay in Delhi, get off the train and stay in Delhi. But there was some pressing business in Bombay, so Srila Prabhupada said to Gurudas, this man is inviting us, get down and see what you can do. So, you know, we're on the train going to Bombay, and Prabhupada is saying, you get down and see what you can do. There was barely 2 minutes to just, you know, collect baggage. So Gurudas and Yamuna agreed. So along with Gurudas and Yamuna and four brahmacharis were deputed off the plane. And one of those brahmacharis was Giriraj Brahmachari. So Yamuna she got her few belongings in those days. Whatever we could put in our hands, that's all we had, because life was like that. You know, if you couldn't carry it, you didn't need it. And as the train pulled away, Jamuna offered her obeisances outside Srila Prabhupada's window and prayed for his mercy. So then Srila Prabhupada wrote from Bombay at the end to the, he wrote a letter to Gurudas, and at the end of the letter he added, "My dear Yamuna, please accept my blessings. Practically, you are the leader of the party. Please let me know how things are going. Hope you are well. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, 7th of November, 1970. So somehow Gurudas and Yamuna had met very many leaders and very much pleased Srila Prabhupada with their effort up until and including meeting Prime Minister Indira Gandhi. So then eventually they were deputed to Vrindavan, and again Srila Prabhupada wrote, "I am confident I have entrusted this Vrindavan project, which is the most important of our mission, to the right persons, namely yourself, your good wife, Yamuna Devi, and Kirudakshayi Prabhu. So far as your question regarding women, I have always accepted the service of women without any discrimination." Srila Prabhupada ki jai. In 1975, on the occasion of Gurudasa Sanyas ceremony, Srila Prabhupada said, "Now, he is Gurudas Swami. I got him married. His wife is also a great devotee, Yamuna. So now Yamuna has taken a very nice path. She has also become sannyasini. Although there is no sannyasini for women, she has voluntarily taken. She is doing very nice. Therefore, I advised her husband, you also take sannyas." Srila Prabhupada named the deities that Yamuna and her lifelong friend in devotional service, Deyanatarini, worshipped, Shishi Radha Banabihari. And he instructed his two devoted disciples, "You can attract the fair sex community. If you can organize all these girls, they will get a transcendental engagement and may not be allured to the frustration of life. Your engagement should be chanting and worship of the deity. It is better that you don't make a large program. Remain humble." It was in January of 76. And Yamuna and Deyanatarini reported to him, "We have taken your instructions very seriously, living a pure, simple life in the full fire of Krishna consciousness. We think this is the most beneficial and are factually tasting the results of this simple life." So this gives a very nice overview of Yamuna's character and the great regard that Srila Prabhupada had for her, not only regard, but the great faith he had in her. She remained very committed to serving his mission. She was very much concerned about the onward growth of Krishna consciousness and the ISKCON mission. In the letter following her departure, Dina wrote to many of us, in part, "It is not possible to spend any time with Yamuna in her later years and not hear her speak about the need to foment the desire for the practice of bhakti in the younger generation, as Srila Prabhupada so purely gave it to us, full of joy and wonder. She feared that some of our own spiritual lassitude, among many other things, can generate apathy towards the process, and therefore an inability to cultivate the urgency needed to prepare for the hereafter, as Srila Prabhupada expresses above. I feel the best way we can honor her memory would be to use our collective resources to discuss and expand on how we can do this in a vital, loving way more and more, the true and enduring gift." In one of my last correspondence with Yamuna, the same theme was very prevalent, that the future of ISKCON and its members, and particularly the young people. She was especially concerned that the sense of urgency that Srila Prabhupada had imparted to all of us would carry on, and she felt an acute concern for his mission. She wrote to me in February of last year, "We want to see how the reflection of our preaching and personal examples reflects Srila Prabhupada's stance, mood, and example. And then the question arises, what is ISKCON's future, and how will our second and third and fourth, etc. generations live and know pure Gaudiya Vaishnavism today and down the line? Of course, we can go anywhere to preach, but do we not need to make it clear the difference between the Hare Krishnas and others? What to speak of the innocent public if we widely associate with peacenik, Kirtanya voices, and impersonalism? So she was very concerned that we maintain the integrity of Srila Prabhupada's missions and pass that same mood on to our up-and-coming future leaders. So Jamuna arrived on the scene as a very eager searcher. I think Shamsundar will reflect on this. Who found what she was searching for. She had been trained in classical ballet, and Janaki, her sister, had commented that this training had actually given her the discipline that was required in devotional life. She was an accomplished weaver who made her own woolen yarn. She was a sandal maker. She was a professional calligraphy artist who used that art to create the first certificates of initiation. I still have my certificate of initiation that Jamuna personally calligraphed and Srila Prabhupada personally signed. She was already a quality gourmet cook and, of course, a beautiful singer. So Jamuna's departure was very much her own way, as was everything in her life. There was no fanfare. She quietly slipped out the back door when no one expected it, thus avoiding any undue fanfare. All glories to Yamuna Devi Dasi Maharani.
I saw Jamuna, I fell in love with her. Even though it was under odd circumstances, an old friend of mine who was in the Black Panther movement showed up at my house. He had a saxophone case. I said, "Oh, are you playing the saxophone now?" And he said, "No, I'm taking food out of people's refrigerators and putting it in." Meanwhile, my Earth Mother friend said, "I have a woman that I'd like you to meet." And she took me across town to Samishandan Malati's place on Lucky Alley. And I did get lucky. So I was sitting there, and Jamuna came into the room with a straight back, and she put two pieces of incense in a hole in the wall, lit, and that was a thunderbolt. I said, "Don't take any food out of this chick's refrigerator." She opened my nose, which is black slang, meaning I fell in love with her. So he got bored and left. And Jamuna and I ended up talking all night and just staying forever together since that time. Not forever, but I moved in, and we used to go on long hikes together. And I noticed she was singing to the flowers and the birds. And I thought, what a wonderful soul, singing to the flowers and the birds, seeing the soul inside the flowers and the birds. There was another yogi that wanted us to join him, but she led me to Prabhupada. She told me about her sister's wedding and how this very nice Swami was coming, and Mukunda came and lived with us, and we all found the storefront, and Prabhupada came, and we spoke of that last night a little bit, how regal he was when he got off the plane. So Jamuna had wonderful qualities. She was meticulous. She was detail-oriented. She wove, as Malati said. She did expert calligraphy with Lloyd Reynolds at Reed College. She also painted our first temple sign, Sri Sri Radhakrishna Temple. We had a very nice time together. We were a good team. We didn't argue. When Krishna and Prabhupada came in our life, it just was a natural thing that we became a team and served together. I too asked Prabhupada if I could go to Vrindavan, and he remembered that. And he said, yes, you both can go to Vrindavan. And he remembered that and sent us there eventually. Then we all went to London, and we were a wonderful team. What I lacked, they picked up. Mukunda was like Perry Como. And Sam Rashinda, the great visionary, he's a great visionary in our midst. And whatever I am, we just, and then behind us were these wonderful women. Now, I was reminded that I used to go into the Brahmachari ashram and read the Krishna book to the Brahmacharinis at night. And so it was just, Prabhupada said, this temple is not artificial, it's natural. You're the father, Jamuna is the mother. And he proved it by saying, women on one floor, men on the other, and they're not mixing. They're so happy. They're not craving. This was the atmosphere. And it was a family. And so I went into the Brahmacharini ashram and read the Krishna book. And I was reflecting on it yesterday that even though we were living very simply, everybody still was protected and taken care of in that temple. And if I was such a person where I disregarded the protection of any devotee, Malati and Jamuna and Janaki would never have let me get away with it. Really. They would not have stand for it, but they didn't have to. And Janaki, too, was a spitfire. So, Prabhupada used to tease her that Jamuna's a better devotee sometimes. They had also a rasa, Prabhupada and Janaki. So, it was glorious. So talented. She would pick up, there'd be a challenge, she would pick up, not miss a beat. For instance, the time we went to see Tom Dreeberg in the hospital. He was a friend of Allen Ginsberg. He was a member of parliament. We were trying to get to see this member of parliament through the usual channels. Of course, no. We heard he was in the hospital with an eye exam. We all go there, the six of us. So Jamuna led the charge. She goes up and says, Mr. Dreeberg, we've been wanting to meet you so much. We're a friend of Allen Ginsberg, and we're starting the Hare Krishna mission here. The man is shaking profusely, turning colors. The hospital thing behind was starting to flatline. We hear across the room, I'm Mr. Dreeberg. It was the man across the room. We had the wrong man. Jamuna didn't miss a beat. She goes over and says, oh, Mr. Dreeberg, we've been trying to meet you. We're friends of Allen Ginsberg. We're starting the mission. And he he was at our disposal because he was sick, and we brought him tapes, and he actually helped out. So then, after meeting George, George said he could make her a pop singer. She had such a wonderful voice that I can make you a pop star. And she said, no, thanks. It's like when Prabhupada said, you can become one of the GBC, Government Body Commissioners. And Jamuna said, no, thanks. I like to worship the deities and cook. And she said to me on the side, too much politics. So even though so talented, remained simple, singing to flowers and birds. Then Prabhupada remembered, and we were sent to India. Mother India, we fell in love with it immediately. It felt like our mother. Immediately getting off the airplane, we bowed down to Bhumi. We felt at home, and a great success, as was read. We went on Kirtan, Harinam Kirtan, in the many sections of Bombay and Mumbai, and unfortunately, where we were staying, the man sent servants in uniform with silver urns of Nimbu Pani, lime water, waiting for us to finish the kirtan. We're supposed to be sadhus, and there's servants in livery waiting for us to give us. So we said, no, we don't need the servants, thank you. And Dinanath was on that party. So many glorious. And we went into Mumbai, and we also went into a place, sadhus on card tables, I call it. There's all these sadhus sitting on card tables with different tilaks, and they were doing a Hamburg Brahmasmi, and we did Hare Krishna, and Jamuna went, Hare Hare Bol! And the whole place went wild. And it changed the mood. And so this was what was going on in Mumbai. And it was glorious. And then Prabhupada came to meet us. And there's many stories. Yes, Prabhupada asked us, get off the train in Delhi, see what you can do. Jamuna also went to meet Indira Gandhi, and immediately Indira Gandhi warmed up to her more than anybody else. She had this effect on people where if she smiled on them, they felt empowered. So, great success. 9 years together. 8 years were wonderful. We were actually not living together a lot of the time. She was too powerful and great, and so she was in charge of women, and I was doing something else. So we didn't live the normal grihastha life because Prabhupada had us serve so much. Yeah, these are some of the photos rendered. This is in the studio making the Govindam. And Saraswati, look at Saraswati. She got so many people to chant. Great devotee. Yeah, this is the family. So then as circumstances had it, I was sannyasi and she became sannyasini. And it was difficult at first. And we had in some ways a nice marriage that was a good example for other people because we were a good team and we didn't argue. And so in some ways I still had some feelings. I wasn't sure about sannyasi and I heard she did. And so Prabhupada said, don't look at Gurdas or talk to him and associate with him. Don't associate with him. But then we had all these reunions in London. And we're sitting, she's there, and Malati was always buffering us there, and Samarshan is just on there, and we're planning things, radio shows and TV shows. And And she's not looking at me or talking to me, but she's running the show and saying, well, okay, I'll chant first, and then you chant collectively, and then you'll chant in solo, and we'll do that. And this went on for years, and she'd hear me talk, and I'd see her peek over, and one time she even clapped, and, you know, but she didn't look at me or talk to me for 40-some-odd years. And I'm thinking, you know, this is old, and it's all right if we meet. Thank you. It's all right if we meet. You know, this is a long time ago, and I understand that. But as far as I'm concerned, I wanted to meet Jamuna once more because it would be a closure in my life. And if it didn't happen, that would be fine. But I did say to Krishna that I would like to meet Jamuna once more. So I was invited to Alachua to speak, and it so happens that she was in Alachua, and she had just gotten back from India suffering sickness, and I was concerned about that. And so I said to the really nice temple president in Alachua, I asked her, I said, I'd like to meet Jamuna. And Jamuna's answer was that if he wants to meet me, I'll meet him. Still a bull. Taurus the bull. So we met the next day. And I'm wondering, what am I going to say to her? What am I going to do? Well, one thing we could do is chant together. That's one thing. So I'm wondering, she hasn't seen me for 40 years, and you know, suppose she's in her bull mood, and I mean, it's just another aspect of her, and it's just powerful, all of it. But the bull mood was very stubborn. So, what is she going to say? What am I going? So she comes out of the room, and I'm sitting in a rocking chair, and she says, comes out and smiles her beautiful smile. And says, Hare Krishna, Gogi. And I said, Hare Krishna, Jumi. Yeah, that was our nicknames. You know, when people are married, sometimes they have nicknames. And it came back to me. I didn't think in 40 years, Gogi. The only one who ever called me that was Jimmy Doody's brother, who couldn't get the Sanskrit names. He was Sammy Shu. He was Sammy Shu, and I was Goo Goo Das. Oh, yeah, there it is. We were talking about that. So it was wonderful. We had two hours together reminiscing about all the early days, and the dog we cured in Vrindavan. We named Dogwood, who had asthma, and the peacocks we fed with our hands, and then she started singing to the birds and the flowers. And we chanted together, and that was a wonderful closure. And so many devotees like Jamuna and Jayananda, we can all, and Prabhupada, we can all look up to for great inspiration. But I say you can be those devotees too. Great service attitude, great perseverance. This is a wonderful family that Prabhupada has given me and us. So let's be inspired by these great devotees and carry on in our own devotional service in that way. Thank you very much.
I was, some days ago, I was trying to think of a description of Jamuna, a short description that might fit personality more than any other word. And I remembered a word that I learned in college, the word gravitas. It's a Greek word, and it's hard to define, but it's something like deeply serious, something that's grave. We get our word gravity from gravitas. This was Jamuna's defining characteristic in my mind. She had a gravity, a heaviness, and gravity attracts everything that comes into its orbit. Jamuna was like that. She was the center of things wherever she went, deeply serious and grave. She always wanted to know what is the truth about things. She always wanted to know the truth. And this was very fortunate for me in my life to have come into her childhood. She came into my childhood. I was trying to remember what year it was. It was 1955 that I met this beautiful young lady, young girl, in junior high school. They had this class called homeroom period. This was, as you may remember from your high school, this is the time of day when you studied in a room for 1 hour, all your other classes, your homework, you studied at homeroom. And after some days or weeks in the school, there was this empty desk in front of me the whole time. And one day, this young, beautiful, striking, dark-haired, black-haired girl sits in it in front of me. And they introduce her to everyone in the class as a new student named Joan Osland. So I was, in those days, quite mischievous, like most young people are, I suppose. We were 15, 14. And one day in home study period, she had black pigtails and they kept falling down on my desk. So I jerked one of them just to see what would be the response. No response. So I let it go a little bit longer. I jerked it again. No response. Finally, about the fourth or fifth time, I pulled really hard, both pigtails. She let out a scream. And she got in major trouble. And from then on, we were very close friends from that day on. She became my earliest soulmate in terms of being able to share new things. Not boyfriend, girlfriend, ever. Nothing like that. But there was a sense of she wanted to know, like I was, what was going on. What was the truth about things? There was this new music called rock and roll. And I remember our first discussions were about this record or that record. And she was so perceptive about what the person was saying in the record. So in this way, we kept away from everybody else. It was just me and Joni. We did things together. We talked about things together that nobody talked about with me except her. And vice versa. She shared everything, what her boyfriend was like. You know, I would tell her about my girlfriends. It was the normal teenage adolescent stuff, but on a different level than anybody else that I had in my life. It was just me and Joni. We were deep soulmate type friends. Then her family moved away. This was in Salem, Oregon. Her family moved away to Portland somewhere. So I lost contact with her for a few years. And I went up to Portland to go to Reed College. It's a school there. And one day I ran into her downtown. She was working behind the jewelry counter at Meyer and Frank department store. I said, "Joni, wow, Sam." So our lives began again a few years later, more mature now. I was in college. She had graduated from high school. She was working. And, oh, she was so happy to find her soulmate again, and so was I. So we began sharing my life at the college. I brought her to meet my friends. By then we were, you know, talking about Bob Dylan. What was he saying in his songs? And she would give her interpretation, and I would give, and yes, oh, you're right, this is what he's saying. And we began reading books together. We would pass back and forth like Siddhartha, you know, Hermann Hesse's book about Buddha, Jack Kerouac's books, On the Road. We started listening to jazz together and getting deeper and deeper, trying to find our way, finding out what is the truth about all of this. It's going so fast now, so intense. These new drugs are coming in that allow you to see certain new dimensions. What do you think, Johnny? What do you think about this? So like that, we began to share our lives very closely. I came down to, after I got out of college, I came down to San Francisco and met Melanie. She became my girlfriend. We came back to, and Jamuna would, or Joni would come down to San Francisco too. Now this was probably 1964, in summers between our college semesters. She would come down. I introduced her to people at Reed College. She was attracted by this calligraphy art from Lloyd Reynolds, so she began to take a class from him. That's where she learned her beautiful calligraphy. She began to take interest in making pots and leather work. She was very good at that. Her boyfriend at the time, who was my roommate in college, Dave Holt, had a leather shop on Grant Street, North Beach, San Francisco. 1964, this was before the hippie phenomenon. So we all moved down to that sandal shop that summer in 64. That's when I met Melanie, I think. We all lived above this sandal shop, trying to find out what's going on, what's going on. We knew something was changing in society, in our lives, in all of our friends' lives. It was major. And we were looking for the truth. We were looking for the meaning of life. We had this really great friend from Reed named Michael Grant, and he was so cool. Michael wore shades in the nighttime, at nighttime. He was so cool. He was the first one who turned us on to Lenny Bruce and all these great jazz musicians. Michael was so good playing the piano. He was a jazz pianist that he played in these coffee houses at night. In Portland, Oregon, we'd go down at 3-4 o'clock in the morning and hang out, smoke thick in the air, Michael pounding the ivories with his black beret, his dark glasses on. He was so cool. So anything that he came up with, we automatically wanted to find out about it because he was a little wave ahead of us. So we all became friends in this way, kind of a little rat pack of our own, trying to find out what it was all about. And so Melanie and I decided to go up to Portland, and the first thing we did is call our friend Joan. And by then she had a house with her sister, Jan, and so I introduced Michael to Joan, and he fell in love with her sister, Jan. So he moved in. So there was those three, and so Melanie and I rented the house next door. It was very fortunate that the house next door was for rent, so all five of us lived next door to each other in these two big houses, old Victorian houses. And we began to read, you know, Autobiography of a Yogi, Tibetan Book of the Dead, Tim Leary's latest book, trying to find out what is the truth, what is the truth, the truth, the truth. And Malati has told the story then about Michael was playing jazz in New York on the Lower East Side somewhere, and he met this Swami, and the story she told. So let's see. Oh, I remember a funny story while we were living next door to each other. This gives a little insight into Jamuna's kind of different personality. Besides her gravitas, Jamuna's defining characteristic to me and our lifelong bond was humor, comedy. I started out in junior high teasing her, pulling her hair, and that was always our kind of rasa. I would tease her sometimes mercilessly to get her to laugh. She had a great sense of humor that always tickled me. I always wanted to make her laugh. I would sometimes tickle her to make her laugh. and say off-color things or something just to get a response, because she was always so grave. I would say something so outrageous that she would have to laugh. So one day, she kept saying over and over again she wanted an aquarium in her house. So one day, somebody loaned me a fishing rod, and I went down to the river, which was just below our house, the Willamette River, and I caught, maybe a dozen of these little fish about this big. They were some kind of panfish, and put them in a bucket of water. And I brought them up to Jamuna's house, Joni's house, and said, "Here's the fish for your aquarium." She didn't have an aquarium. "What are we going to do with them?" I said, "Well, let's put them in your bathtub." So she ran the water in the bathtub. We threw the fish in, and for several months, those fish lived in her bathtub. And she cared for them meticulously. You know, she put rocks in there, and she planted little plants around, and she found a turtle to put in there. But one day she says, "You know, I've got to be able to take a bath. I really need my bathtub back." So she had me catch the fish and put them in a bucket and take them back to the river. Yeah, she was coming to our place next door to take a shower. This is Jamuna. So then, the short form is, Malati and I were up in this fire lookout, which was only 4,500 feet, not 10,000. And all summer, we hadn't seen anybody for 3 months. I was up in the tower watching from dawn to dark for fires. And suddenly, near the end of the summer, this old car, or I guess it was a new car, they had rented, or it was a drive-away car of some kind, just pulled into by our cabin, and Jamuna and Mukunda, their names we didn't know, but Joan and Mike and Jan jumped out of this car. They started telling us about this Swami that they'd met in New York. And they had these great big red beads on, and they were chanting something. They were making some mumbling noises and grinning all over from ear to ear. And, of course, the first thing we offered them was a cup of coffee. No. So here, we have some meat. No. You know, how about some drugs? We got some great drugs. No. But we couldn't believe it, you know. And they started telling us about this man they met. And I said, "Oh, do you think this is the one, Jamuna? Do you think this is the one we've been looking for?" She said, "This is the one. This is the one we've been looking for." So automatically, I accepted it right away. That was it. If Jamuna said, and Malati agrees, she found out too. I mean, she respected whatever Jamuna said. This is it. Okay, I accept it completely. And if Mukunda also, I mean, you can't, no two could have said, "This is the one," and we would have accepted immediately. But they both said, "This is the one." So we accepted immediately. So, you know, over the years, this gravitas, this grave, heaviness of Jamuna persisted through all of our activities together. She always went to the heart of the matter, no matter what. She had she was almost like one of Prabhupada's elder daughters, their relationship. She was very respectful for Srila Prabhupada, listened to everything he said, and whatever he said, she followed. Whereas Janaki was a bit more mischievous. She was almost like a naughty child. She was almost like Prabhupada's mother sometimes. She would chide him. "No, Prabhupada, you shouldn't, or Swamiji, you shouldn't do that." "Oh, okay." Prabhupada would back off. What's 10,000 feet?
The mountain.
Oh, yeah, the top of the mountain. But no.
Sister, the town of Sisters was 4,000.
No. We'll decide that later. But the one word I think that persists through my... the one word that persists through Jamuna's... The one word that persists through Jamuna's entire Krishna consciousness career is fixed up. She was fixed up from day one. I mean, we first heard that word to talk about devotees who were really good, really advanced devotees, we said they were fixed up. And Jamuna was always fixed up, right from the day one. I mean, she was our example of what it meant to be fixed up. We were struggling, you know, we were falling down, but she was fixed up. So she was always our example. We kept her in front of us as the example of how we should be. You know, we those difficult times in London, it was Jamuna and Malati and the girls that kept us going, really. I mean, there's no way we could have done these incredible things that we did there, except these girls made us get up in the morning, they made us chant, they made us have kirtan, and made us come together. And if we were living in separate places, the girls arranged it, Jamuna in charge, and they made sure we kept to the regulations and rules. That's the secret of our effectiveness in that town. And throughout our days in London, our early days, Jamuna, for some reason, we knew that somehow or other we would have to perform in public kirtan and give Krishna consciousness a musical expression. So right from the beginning, she organized us as a band. Gurudas was the first one with the guts to wear a dhoti. And the first one to shave his head as well. I mean, she kind of forced you to do that, I think. So if Gurudas, she and Malati got a hold of these old bed sheets and they dyed them this kind of yellowish, you know, faded yellow color. And we started wearing dhotis and shaved our heads to become a band under Jamuna's direction. Well, yeah, but as a formal band, all dressed alike. And Jamuna taught us the words. She made us memorize all these prayers, Govindam, Adi Purusham, da-da, da-da, da-da. And she made up the melodies. Jamuna made up all of these melodies. The Hare Krishna mantras, she had melodies, the Govindam prayers, all the prayers we did on those records. Jamuna composed, sometimes with Mukunda, the melodies. And she made us memorize the words. To this day, I don't know what those words mean. I still don't know what they mean in English, many of them. But she made us memorize them to the music. And then India, you know, we all went to India. And her struggles in Vrindavan, her and Gurudas, my God, nobody knows how they struggled there to follow what Prabhupada wanted there. I mean, that in itself would be a major book, the struggles you guys had. And Jamuna was the strong one. She kept it going. She kept it anchored. And then over the years, I didn't see Jamuna often, but I would visit her sometimes in Saranagati. We would remember the old days and laugh. I would tease her, continue to tease her, to make her laugh. I think we had jokes and laugh on the side that nobody else had. We had that relationship. And she was still the most fixed up person that I knew throughout all the Krishna conscious period. She was always the example of being fixed up. My deepest confidant, I could say anything to Jamuna. She could say anything to me. I saw her last, was it a year, maybe a year and a half ago. I went to India. I took this famous guitarist there, Joe Walsh. He plays for the group called the Eagles. So I took him and his wife. They wanted to go on a little tour of India. And I heard Jamuna was in the hospital there, so I thought, I want to introduce you guys to somebody really special in Krishna consciousness. And I played them her records, Govindam and Hare Krishna and the other ones. Oh man, so I took them up to meet Jamuna, and then she was in this room on the top of the hospital, just barely coming out of her very ill period. She was dressed very simply in a gown. And I said, Jamuna, I'm coming with a couple of friends I want you to meet. Oh, no, I can't meet. Yes, I'm coming. There's no way you're going to get out of this. They're only here this afternoon, so we're coming. So I opened the door, and those three got along so great. It was so wonderful watching this one of the most famous guitarists in the world appreciate Jamuna's musical ability and vice versa. It was very special, and to this day, Joe's always said, "What's going on? What's going on with Jamuna?" And when I told him recently about her passing away, he was so sad. I last saw Jamuna in Alachua, probably about the same period you did, Gurdas, maybe a little after. And I spent the afternoon with her there in Alachua, and we found out somehow, rather, we started to talk about Gorsundar, one of the early devotees. You saw his picture many times in these walks here. He kind of disappeared from Krishna consciousness, but he was such a stout fellow and such a wonderful devotee, and Prabhupada loved him so much. So we found his phone number, and we talked to him. Jamuna and I talked to him that afternoon. It's been a long time, and Jamuna talked to him so nicely and remembered everything that he was good at, and it was really nice hearing her talk that way. And we laughed. We laughed together till tears were pouring out of our eyes, remembering some of the old stuff. And the last thing I said to her was, "Well, Jamuna, you got to get back in shape. That's all there is to it. You're living here in Florida. It's all flat here. You got to get back to the mountains here next summer. Come back to Oregon, and we'll hike up Mount Jefferson again together." She said, "Okay, next summer I'm coming. We'll hike up Mount Jefferson together." So just a few days before she passed, we talked on the phone, and I said, "Are you happy, Jamuna? Are you happy?" And she said, "I'm so happy, Shyam. I'm so happy we met Srila Prabhupada together. Thank you very much." Those are the last words I heard from her. So thank you, Jamuna, for being such a fixed-up, stalwart example for all of us.
Hare Krishna. Good evening. I'm not a speaker. I have no qualification to be here, except that I had a long, loving friendship with Jamuna. So I've been asked to speak to you to give you a little of my insight and perspective on who she was as a person. So I'm going to make a departure here from all these wonderful stories and give you a little insight and try to find a voice to express who Jamuna was to me and to give you an idea of how she thought and inspire you. For me, it's like trying to offer drops of water back to the Jamuna River. So please forgive me in my attempts tonight. So to begin, I think the perfect way is to describe Jamuna would be in her own words. You have to live it to give it. You have to live bhakti to give bhakti. She would say this very often. And Jamuna did that in every respect in her life. She was a deeply devoted servant, as you've heard here this evening. And she held a very profound love and understanding of Srila Prabhupada. And that blended with her extremely high standard of devotional service, both internal and external, was one of her most attractive qualities to me. Srila Prabhupada had said on more than one occasion, "She has Baba." And I don't know if anyone else has heard him say that about anyone else in our lifetime. So I would like to showcase Jamuna tonight by that aspect. How did Jamuna show this? She gave with such love and compassion. Jamuna wanted to offer others what she felt that she was so fortunate to receive from Srila Prabhupada. She learned directly from Srila Prabhupada that this process was joyful to practice. And that was the mood that she lived in, a moment-to-moment basis. She would so often say, "This is a process that you can live and live happily and grow in your spiritual lives and make it your life and be fulfilled and enriched and be incredibly blessed." Giving that to others to taste and to share what Srila Prabhupada had given her was what was most important to Jamuna. You can take two things, her love for Srila Prabhupada and her dedication to the practice and principles of Krishna consciousness, and then you combine that with her natural love and compassion for other people in general, and you get this wonderful blend of who she was and what she was about. There was never a time that she was not this. This only deepened over the years because Jamuna relished the practice of Krishna consciousness. She grew with the process, and as she grew with the process, she grew more with a desire to give it to others, and especially the younger generation over these last several years. For she feared that what Srila Prabhupada had given would be lost. She felt an incredible desire to want to see that they got a chance to taste this, to be able to make it a lifestyle. She wanted to give them what Srila Prabhupada had given her. Besides Jamuna's profound love for Srila Prabhupada, I had never seen anyone relish the 9 processes as Jamuna did in every aspect of her life. And she made it very exciting. And when you would think, wow, it doesn't get any better, she would say, no, it just keeps getting better and better. She called it the magic carpet ride. Jamuna deeply internalized the gift of bhakti that Srila Prabhupada gave to us. And she gifted that freely to others without any desire for honor or distinction. She showed by her example that you can live this process and experience wonderful blessings in terms of spiritual growth. She lived with this 110% of her life. She was the embodiment of enthusiasm, and when you were in her presence, you got it. Her expression was so transparent. She lived the process, and it was never out of duty. It was always real and untainted by desire for fame or recognition. This was one of her outstanding and unmatched qualities. Life for Jamuna was the process. Another one of her qualities that stood out for me and that defined for me in a very real sense was her ability to express the profound in feeling and make you open up so much further. The simplest to the most complex. We could read philosophy, discuss any topic, observe any given situation, material, spiritual, anything in between. And she would unlock deeper and deeper ways of seeing and always brought it to such clarity and a story or connection to Srila Prabhupada. Jamuna would ask the most probing and penetrating questions, unlike any questions that you would have ever been asked by anyone, with the intent to force you to reflect on what you had heard and to go deep. She would break through and break open the heart to get to the cream, and then would inevitably say, "What does that mean to you? How does that speak to you?" These were common phrases she would ask, and then if you did not go deep enough, she would answer her own question with her own words. In this way, she was a mentor, a guide, and a loving friend. When we would have class, it was always reading. Each one would read something, and then each one would have to discuss. And she would want, that's when she would ask you, "How does that make you feel? What does that say to you?" And I have to say that no one had ever touched my life or deepened me in more ways or shown me that this was a joyful process. She would unlock hearts for all those that were in her presence. This couldn't be avoided. You could not be on autopilot with Jamuna. Her enthusiasm made everything fresh, and she brought everything to life in another dimension. And when you would want more and more, the bar was raised in Jamuna's presence. Her attitude was always about introspection, the internal processing of Krishna consciousness, to be conscious, be present, be able to look at yourself and be honest. For honesty was always the conclusion of all of our talks on any level. She would say that honesty is so important to spiritual life. Jamuna's attention to detail excelled in all realms. Her love of kirtan, the holy name, her artistry, her culinary abilities, her devotion, her love and compassion for others, and her uncanny ability to get to the heart of any matter. Her penetrating questions, her love and devotion for Srila Prabhupada, her high standards in all aspects of life. These qualities stand out in showcasing who Jamuna was. You may ask, what did Jamuna and I share? Our relationship began by sharing our individual and intense desire to serve Srila Prabhupada personally. She would say that our shared love for Srila Prabhupada was the glue that held us together. We would tell each other our individual stories and inevitably would end up both in tears and laughter. As odd as it may sound, we shared, I'm sure, as anyone in Prabhupada's personal service, a brand of intensity that you're willing to give up your life to be with him personally and in his service. We shared that kind of intensity, and anyone in his service was moved to that intensity, or it didn't last in his presence. We were both also of the nature to seek out the best ingredients, the highest quality, in Srila Prabhupada's service, and this continued in our time together. And I also worked with Jamuna on the cookbook for many, many years. I mean, that cookbook was, what, 10 years, 12 years in the making. 12. And I first met Jamuna in 74 when she was at Fogal Ashram, the first festival. And then she left that year, India, in October, I think, and moved on to Grants Pass. And she returned to India in 76. And at that time, I was in Prabhupada's service cooking. And she came to speak to Prabhupada about the cookbook and how to go about it and to get his blessings. And we connected again immediately. And so we decided to go on the magical mystery tour of researching recipes. So she and I and Palika and I left Prabhupada's service and left Arundhati in charge of cooking, and we, Jamuna and I and Palika, took off for Calcutta, and we stayed with Pishima, Prabhupada's sister, and studied, and then we stayed with a life member, C.L. Bajoria, which I know you know very well, and I also became very close with. So we stayed with him for the longest time, and every day we would meet and tell him what we wanted to learn, and he would tell his cooks, and the cooks were at our disposal. And it was amazing, and then went on to Bhubaneswar, and then Jamuna went on back to America after the time researching, and then Palika and I returned to Prabhupada's service. And then Jamuna went to Grants Pass, and then after that I joined Jamuna in Oregon for about 6-7 weeks, recipe testing. And then when she moved to England, I went to England and worked with her there. And then when she left England, she moved to Key West. I was living in Key West. So she came and lived with me there for, I don't know, a year and a half, and was finalizing the cookbook. So that was our journey, and we shared, I mean, we could talk cooking, we called it shop, we could talk shop. I mean, Dina would go in and close the door and just couldn't imagine how much we could talk on this aspect, but we shared many levels, and with that was the, we would cross the country, go anywhere to find the best ingredients and the best quality, and she did that with Prabhupada. And I had that same desire when I was in Srila Prabhupada's service, but Jamuna told one story where Prabhupada wanted oranges, and she went to Loy Bazaar, she came back, gave him the juice, he said it was terrible. Then she sent someone to Mathura, and they brought oranges, and he said they were useless. So then somebody went on to Agra, and they brought, if you know how far that is, they brought oranges, and he said they were useless. So the interesting thing, this happened when I didn't know Jamuna, and Prabhupada in 70, I hadn't shared with her about my service to Prabhupada. I didn't begin cooking for him until 75, and I was in his cooking service 75, 76, and 77. But when he came to Miami, it was a time of year where it was the best oranges in Florida. And I went to a couple farms to get two different types of oranges. And Shudakirti was his servant, so I blended these. I squeezed these two oranges together. One was a tangerine murkot, and one was a honeybell. And because I always sought quality, and I thought these were the best. So I made the juice and gave it to Shudakirti. And Prabhupada immediately said, "Who has made this?" And he immediately wanted to know, and I spoke to him, and he immediately appreciated the quality. And so I saw that right away, and so then that was something that Jamuna and I shared. And there's one story I have that Jamuna had also told me when she made some chapatis for Prabhupada once. But he could tell how long ago the flour was milled. He could tell you the particular strain of the wheat, whether it was cooked on wood, gas, or coal. His senses were so refined and so elegant. And so on this one occasion, when she brought in the chapatis, he said, "This is Pishi Lahore wheat that was ground in the last 3 hours." And there was no way he could have known that. She had taken this to Radharaman temple. That's where they would grind this particular type of wheat for Radharaman. And then Prabhupada went on to say, "It is very nice, but the chapati should have been left on the tawa 1 or 2 seconds longer." He was expert, refined, and knowledgeable on all fronts. And there was another story on Jamuna with Prabhupada's cooking, and in her words, she said, "So far as Srila Prabhupada's eating his prasadam at that time, there was one wonderful pastime when in his room I had brought in his lunch prasadam. He'd just taken his massage and bath, enchanted Gayatri, and put on tilak. He looked as radiant and brilliant as the sunrise. In the morning, he looked up and saw this prasadam and said, 'What have you prepared today?' I showed him the things, and he said to me, 'Where have you learned all these things?' I said, 'You have taught me, Srila Prabhupada.' 'No, I have not taught you this. Who has taught you these things?' And I said, 'Everything I know is from you, Srila Prabhupada.' He said, 'No, I'm asking you where you have learned to cook these things.' So I said, 'I see what you mean, Srila Prabhupada. I have been doing as you instructed and trying to learn from the Gujarati ladies who were staying with just before coming here.' He said, 'They are so nice. When I left India, I was prepared to eat bread and potatoes. I never dreamed that I would be taking this kind of prasadam. But it is all by Krishna's arrangement. Krishna is giving you the intelligence to do these things. And you see, when one takes a risk for Krishna, he is never the loser. He is always the winner. Thank you. Thank you very much.' again, there was a similar, I guess it's in your mindset. When Prabhupada asks you, what have you learned? You automatically say, from you, Srila Prabhupada. When I was in Bhubaneswar, I think we went there after Kumbh Mela in 77, I had just given Prabhupada his medicine and I was kneeling next to him on his, should I tell you the story of the medicine? It's one of my favorite stories. Oh no, I can't do that. To give you one more. All right, I'll forget that story. But you have nothing else to do? Oh. Yeah, I could tell you tomorrow maybe, but oh Lord. I'm going to tell you the story. The reason why I loved this, the reason why it was my favorite, because it was so intimate. I would come in at a certain time after his morning massage. He'd be behind his desk, and he had four Ayurvedic pills, and I boiled some roots to a thick tar almost. It was very bitter. And so I went in, I kneeled down in front of him, put down the pills, they were in a katori, poured him some water, and I was kneeling across from him. I put out my hand, he would empty the four pills into my hand, and you have to hold this, Malati. And the reason why I loved this story, because it was like time stopped. And Prabhupada with his fingers, so I had the pills in one hand, the water in the other. He would take two fingers like this, and he would slowly go across the palm of my hand. He'd pick up one pill, just like a mudra. He'd pick up one, he'd put it, and I'd hand him the water. And we did this back and forth, slow, with presence of each one. And every time he dragged his two fingers like this, he would take another pill. And I'd hand him the water. And then he picked up the little katori of the tar. And he sipped it. And he looked at me in his face. And he said, very bitter experience. And I will say it's the one maha that I could never take. Because he wouldn't finish it. But then after that, and he laughed, he looked at me and he said, how I got to the story was this correlation with Jamuna, with what he has taught her. So he looked at me and he smiled and he said, you have learned very nicely. And I immediately said, Srila Prabhupada, whatever I know is coming from you. Whether you've told me or you didn't tell me, directly it's coming from you. He didn't question on that one with me. He immediately, with matter of fact, said yes. He said, that is because of your sincerity. So both aspects are there in his teachings. He encouraged you to learn from others. And then also that desire, because I had no qualification, honestly. I won't sidetrack here, pushing me on the time. I had no qualification to be there, but I had intense desire, to where I said previously that I'd be willing to give up my life. That was all I wanted, was to be in his presence. So, okay, we did the chapati. Okay, the one more. So what was my last... So then in conclusion, I'm just going to read you Jamuna's words addressing the GBC in 2000. And this is very short. And this will highlight how she was feeling. Because her mood was, what was most important to her was to give what Srila Prabhupada had given her. She didn't feel qualified. She felt very fortunate. and she wanted to give others what Srila Prabhupada had given because she was afraid it was going to be lost. And actually Prabhupada, Balaji, you might remember this, and I remember Jamuna telling me in Calcutta, I think when he wanted Jamuna to teach Kaushalya something to cook, he wanted her to teach her to teach Kaushalya. He said, if you have knowledge and you do not give it, then you simply become envious. So, Shyam said, Jamuna took every instruction to heart and to the fullest. And whatever Prabhupada gave her, she excelled. And so she not only gave all, I mean, Prabhupada had given her his tooth, he'd given her clothes, he'd given her, I think he gave her the first Krishna book. When it was brought to him and he saw it for the first time, he gave that to her. He gifted her on many occasions, and by the end, Jamuna had none. She had given everything away. She wanted to share Srila Prabhupada with everybody. So she addressed the GBC in 2000. To conclude, Srila Prabhupada trained me to be concerned about his movement, and at this time, I'm deeply concerned. Now more than ever, it is a time to revive and imbibe Srila Prabhupada's mood with his disciples. If we neglect this, an aspect of his greatness will remain unknown to future generations. Let us instill in every person who comes into contact with Srila Prabhupada's movement the healthy spiritual relationships that he had with his followers, his mood of encouragement, protection, and kindness. The closer we come to individually appreciating and honoring Srila Prabhupada's personal dealings with his disciples, the closer we will come to his sense of completeness in Krishna consciousness, to his joyfulness, to his transcendentally attractive nature. With great care, our service is to create a devotional environment where men, women, and children can thrive in Krishna consciousness, rendering service according to their desire and inclination. Our service is to empower rather than inhibit the service propensity in others. Thank you for giving me this opportunity today, and I hope that I have left a part of who Jamuna was and have inspired you in some way by hearing more of who she was. Hare Krishna.
So for the last, you have to excuse me, I lost my voice on the Harinam today. For the last 12 or 13 years of her life, Jamuna spent in Sharanagati. And I've always wondered how she managed to find such a place that's so remote and out of the way. Hardly anyone knows about it, but for some reason we were fortunate enough that she decided to live there. So, I don't think I'm yet qualified to speak from the heart, so I have written something up. I know that it's getting late, so I'll just try and paraphrase it all, and maybe I can just cue you when to change the pictures. So, when Srila Prabhupada was here, Jamuna devoted her life to him and his mission. She eagerly learned Krishna consciousness and was an integral and influential part of the growth of ISKCON. Her life after he left the planet, however, is rarely thought of. But it's just as important, if not more, as her time spent being a leading force in ISKCON. Because when he left, she not only lived bhakti, but she gave bhakti. I was a fortunate recipient of this period in her life where she gave and gave and gave bhakti unconditionally, where she was no longer participating in opening temples and preaching tirelessly, but when she enthusiastically poured her love for Krishna into everyone's heart without hesitation, without judgment, unreservedly to every blessed soul who came into her association. So, the time when my life became intertwined with Jamuna's was that fateful day where the five girls living in this small village, Sharanagati, gathered around her table, and somehow we decided to become the Banabihari milkmaids. I don't remember why or how we decided to make this group, but after much deliberation, we came up with that name, the Banabihari milkmaids. And so that day, we made t-shirts with Jamuna, but also that was the day that our bond was first created with Jamuna. And that was the day that she first became our teacher, our friend, our second mother, but most importantly, our spiritual strength and guide. So, as a teacher, Jamuna taught us many things, ranging from her incredible calligraphy to building paper houses. But there were a few things that we learned that were especially potent, the first being how to cook. So, as is Jamuna's way, she began to teach us to cook before we ever actually cooked with her. She would invite us for prasadam one day, and we would watch her make something sometimes simple like quesadillas, or sometimes it would be something like ras malai or rasgullas. And she would set it on the table, and she would tell us all to taste, but she would never taste first. She would always watch us first. And without fail, every single time, it was delicious. I mean, she never made something that wasn't delicious. And I remember exclaiming, "Oh, Jamuna, this is so good!" And she would say, "Well, you know, I just whipped this up. I've never made something like it before." And so sometimes she would tell us to close our eyes and tell her what we thought she spiced it with or what secret ingredient she added. Usually we didn't get it right, but when we did, she would get so excited. She would say, "Yes, yes, you got it!" And when we didn't, she would just chuckle and tell us that, "No, that's not it." But when she finally did taste her own prasadam, she would immediately tell us what it needed to be improved. A little more salt here, or a dollop of sour cream would torque this up a little. And every time we would enthusiastically agree. The thing about cooking with Jamuna is that she was always fun and daring. She never stuck to a recipe, really. She'd ask us, "You know, do we dare put some amchur powder in here, girls?" And we would say, "I don't really know what that is, but sure." And she would always agree with us as well. And it was with this light instruction that she began to teach us to cook straight from Srila Prabhupada. So when we finally began to actually have cooking classes with her, she would make it very, very fun and enjoyable. First, we would always chant our Om Gyana prayers. Whatever we did with Jamuna, we would always chant the Om Gyana prayers first. And she started out very, very simply with just simply wonderfuls. But she taught us the same things with simply wonderfuls that she would teach us with anything else, because Jamuna was that capable. So at the end of every class, we would sit down and she would hold our hands and we'd offer the preparation. And we would go around the table and we would tell her what we thought it needed. And every time she would enthusiastically agree with us. She never put anyone down. She was always so encouraging, so supportive. We never got the opportunity to learn to cook anything complicated with her. But that wasn't very important, because the message that she stressed to us, it wasn't what to cook or how to cook it. It was that we always cook for Krishna. That was her message, always. She always told us that the consciousness you're in when you're cooking will be transferred into your prasadam, and it is the intention and consciousness of the mind that makes prasadam prasadam. So I always attributed Yamuna's cooking not only to her experience, but to her consciousness when she cooked. She was always chanting, always humming, always immersed in thoughts of pleasing the Lord, never of herself. It was always for the pleasure of Krishna, and that was the legacy that she passed on to us. So, I'll just skip a couple. one more. Okay. So, another thing Jumuna instructed us in, though not too extensively, was deity worship. So it wasn't by classes or anything that she taught us. It was simply by serving Radha Bhana Bihari alongside her. So in the summertime, we would come to the morning programs, and that's their house. It would always be lightly glowing. Dina would be doing aarti. Jimuna would be sitting with her little chime instrument, lightly playing and singing. Slowly shaking her head, her eyes tightly closed, relishing the words all the time. We would join in, and after aarti, after she had recited her famous All Glories to the Transcendental Mangal Aarti Devotees, she would always tell us that, "Oh, I'm so happy to see you here, girls. You've just made my day." And so every Friday, Radha Bhana Bihari were redressed. And so after Bhagavatam class, we would team up, usually in pairs, to do service for the lordships. Some of us doing the vases, some of us just sweeping the floors or bringing wood. And it was just Dino or Jimuna alone who would change the deities. After about 2 hours in the morning, we would all come together with our services, and we would put them all together. The deities would be set on the altar, and we would choose a theme for the week. Sometimes it was fruit or little mirrored balls hanging from the altar, or sometimes it was the silver pond with the fish and turtles and floating flower candles. But every week, without fail, Dina and Jimuna would always exclaim that, "Oh, they've never looked so beautiful. They've never looked so beautiful." Every week they would say that. So once we were finished with the altar, Jimuna would stand in front of the altar, swaying back and forth, holding our hands. Sometimes her head would rest on one of our shoulders and she would be smiling, and usually we would all end up with tears. So after that, we would sing the Govindam prayers with her. And she would always, Dina would do the aarti, and Jimuna would go in front of the deities with a little hand mirror, showing them the reflections, singing sweetly. And it was always so wonderful. So from all these times, these mornings, serving with Jimuna, serving Radha Bhana Bihari, Jimuna never told us anything. She never instructed us in any kind of deity worship. But just by being her presence, she instructed you. And we all learned just by serving alongside her that you don't have to be doing the aarti or dressing the deities to be rendering service to Radha Bhana Bihari. You could be dusting the altar or cleaning the floors, but if it's done with love for their lordships, then every service is equal. So we knew that if we weren't yet qualified to render direct service to Radha Bhana Bihari, then serving Dina and Jimuna was just as beneficial. And so we would serve Dina and Jimuna, and it would give us as much pleasure as serving Radha Bhana Bihari. So, perhaps the most important thing we learned and did with Jimuna, what shaped our lives the most, and where probably our deepest connection was with her, was through kirtan. Not just kirtan. Jamuna would always call it Krishna kirtan. It began first many years ago, but it wasn't until 2007 that the Bani Bihari milkmaids started going. They were the songs of Bhakti Vinod. So they were led by Kirtamrsha Das, originally from Florida, and he devised a melody for every single song in three of Bhakti Vinod's songbooks, the Sharanagati, Geetavali, and Kalyana Kalpataru. So Jimona and Dina always said that when they first heard him, that they just knew that he had the potency to transport them to another place with his chanting. So on that third year, we came and we brought our parents along with us. I was 12 years old that first year. And that was the year that we sang Kalyana Kalpataru, which is Bhakti Vinod's like most harsh and serious songbook. They all had names like, you know, cheating devotees are rejectable and pretty serious stuff. Dina so often said that, you know, I just couldn't believe that I saw these girls come every week and sit down while even some of the older devotees would get up and leave and just, gosh, this is too much to take in. But we would come and sit there every week. Half the truth was that we couldn't understand anything. We couldn't read the English very well, and we definitely couldn't read and sing along with the Bengali, but the other half of the truth is that these songs of Bhakti Vinod, they're so beautiful, and they're so powerful and pure that they unconsciously worked on our hearts and our minds, and though we couldn't sing along, we could listen, and it was through listening, hearing these prayers that we developed an attachment for the songs of Bhakti Vinod, although we didn't yet recognize it. So that first summer was quite an ordeal, and we couldn't participate very well. But before we knew it, we were back the next year to sing Sharanagati. For 4 years, we sang these songs of Bhakti Vinod. And Jimuna often described them as transporting, because that is exactly what they did. These songs, they transported you to a place where there was no time, there was no recollection of material problems, and there was nothing but the transcendental sounds that entered your ears and filled your heart. filled your heart with this understanding that this is where you belong, not out there trying to resist Maya's snares, but here where you can step through the door of the Radha Banavihari Ashram and leave your material self behind and just become a whole other person. often, while singing, you would hear Jimuna's voice rise or fall, and it was always flooded with so much emotion. At those moments, you would strain your ears to listen, to catch a glimpse of what pure chanting sounds like, to hear that potent sound coming from within her and treasure it, aspire to it, because we all knew that this was pure chanting. She would sit in her rocking chair, her eyes closed. Sometimes tears would silently slide down her cheeks, and she would tap the wampers that rested on her chest. At times, she would ecstatically let out a Krishna, Krishna, or a Gauranga. We would sit and chant and listen, capturing the mood in our hearts, this mood of sweetness and quiet personal meditation. This mood became attributed as Jimuna's mood. It reflected her sweet personality and her close relationship with Srila Prabhupada, and it cannot be replicated without her. Jimuna taught us, not through instruction, but through example, how to sing and play instruments for Krishna, to keep pride in the desire for fame at bay and simply sing and play for the pleasure of the deity and the devotees. When Jimuna sang, there was not a hint of pride or vanity, not a drop of arrogance or self-satisfaction. There was only pure love for Krishna. Her emotion when she sang the holy names was tangible. It entered immediately into your heart and chased away the desire for anything but to be able to feel what she felt while chanting. So eventually we learned to accompany these prayers ourselves. And Jamuna, simply through her method of chanting and her mood, taught us that you don't play instruments to demonstrate prowess and skill. You play only to sweetly accompany the chanting and bring increased pleasure to the ears of Lord Krishna. That is the only reason. We did not play unless we could sing, because forsaking the reason for Krishna Kirtan, chanting, simply for being able to play in increasingly complicated ways, was unreasonable and would completely defeat the purpose. Simply through example, not through lengthy discussions and instruction, but through example, Jamuna showed us what it was to do kirtan for Krishna. Dearest Jamuna, this is something that I will be eternally grateful for. Tasting this mood of love and simplicity has marked my heart forever, and though we can still reach for it, even though with Dina, we can taste it again, there is still a gaping emptiness where your voice would rise and fall, still moments where we listen for the tapping of your wampers, still times when someone will blissfully puncture the kirtan with a hari bol, and we will all be reminded that it used to be your voice calling out. Dear Jamuna, though we go on, though we struggle to still aspire to what you have shown us and allowed us to taste, the loss of your presence is agonizing we felt. Krishna Kirtan will never be the same without your ecstatic remarks of nectar, too much nectar. Without your protective and powerful personality presiding over these kirtans, guiding and filling us with these inexplicable feelings, without you, grasping on what we had with you is so much more difficult. We pray to someday be able to feel what you felt while lovingly chanting for the Lord. We pray to always live up to what you have shown us, taught us, and to always keep pride and false ego at bay and chant only for the pleasure of Krishna. So, I had originally asked some other people to put their voices into what I would bring here. And something that I got from Janavi from London, she's very, very, very dear to Jamuna, and she couldn't be here, so I asked her to send something. And so she sent me a poem that she wrote about Jamuna. And as soon as I read it, I knew that it captured Jamuna's presence and her personality perfectly. So I'd just like to end by sharing that with you all today. So it's called In the Afternoon. Face upturned to the sun, alone on the balcony, you look down on the ocean, that vast shifting blue that sends up a fine spray. I don't want to disturb you deep in this moment, diving into those secret waters that have beginning and no end. Eyes closed, you taste the color, the beauty, the changing light. You drink it all in with ears and eyes tuned to the divine, to the details that escape most of us. Such refinement in your every action, every word drawn from that sacred depth. I try to catch it all with my pens and paper, my gadgets, but I am overwhelmed by the volume of wisdom and love. Like cupping my hands in a rain shower, the rest falls to the thirsty ground. Rose petals and cashews, arcing letters on a page, pure grace, a little piece of cheese inside the tikis, subtle surprises, nuances in flavor and texture and feel. Krishna is so real to you, so present. The Goswamis are your dearest gurus. All is dynamic, fascinating, thrilling. Only the thinnest of veils separates you. With you, we experience the truth. Even your wit, sometimes mercury quick, has the snap of profound reality. You love, you love, you love. Anyone is eligible. If there is a jewel to be found, you find it and polish it, holding it to the light and proclaim its worth and beauty, till we believe you and forget that we are only reflecting your light. Thank you.
Thank you.
beautiful. I've never seen him look more beautiful. It's even better than last week. I've never looked so beautiful.